Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I am John Arola, and I'm admittedly not in the best mood. I spent a lot of time this morning on Twitter. Why did I do that? It's a terrible idea. I don't know if there's much that could turn my mood around, but I have one idea of something that might. And she joins us now. Nina Turner's on the show. Nina, how's it going? Oh, Nina, I think we got you muted, I think.
John, don't do that to yourself. Don't go down that. Don't do that.
I should.
Leave Twitter alone.
I know. I really should. I don't know. Like, you gotta be on it. And it seems like the more you're on it, the better you do. I try, but it's just, it gets in your head. But anyway, forget Twitter. We've got you and we've got news and we're gonna discuss it together. You're coming off of your birthday week. How have you been? What's new with you?
Good. It's been really great. I had to get a reschedule for my birthday, even though Jinx said to me, that's not how that works. But for me, that is how that works. So I did some things this weekend with my family. It was really nice. So thank you for continuing this.
Awesome.
I need the whole month at this stage of my life. So there
it is. That's great. That's great. I'm looking forward. My brother is going to be spending Christmas time with us. My wife and I have been decorating for the holidays. That is giving me some life. Our tree is all set now. So that'll hopefully cancel out the Twitter. But anyway, we'll see. As I alluded to, we do have a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of the next hour and a half, including some of the newly released text messages going around on January 6th. The Biden administration's position on student loan debt cancellation has been clarified a little bit. Some legislation that might have affected the outcome of those horrendous tornadoes that swept across multiple states over the weekend, and Time has named a new person of the year. I have some thoughts, and I think Nina does too. So don't go anywhere. We got a lot we're gonna be talking about. If you go anywhere, it should be a short trip, just down to the like button and maybe sharing the stream. Wouldn't that be nice? But with that, Nina, you ready to talk about some of this stuff?
I am ready.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump into this video.
Dozens of texts, including from Trump administration officials, urged immediate action by the president. Quote, POTUS has to come out firmly and tell the protesters to dissipate. Someone is going to get killed.
So what you just saw there was Liz Cheney, I think technically still in the Republican Party. I don't know if they fully booted her out, but anyway, she's reading some of the text messages that notable individuals were sending to Mark Meadows on January 6th to attempt to get him in his position as chief of staff at that point to get Donald Trump to call off the rioters who were in the process of attacking the Capitol. And as you can see from that, they were very explicit saying, this is terrible, you've got to stop it. And there was way more where that came from. So let's jump into a little bit more from the hearing last night.
In another, Mark, he needs to stop this now. A third, in all caps, tell them to go home. A fourth, and I quote, POTUS needs to calm this down. Indeed, according to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately. They texted Mr. Meadows, and he has turned over those texts.
So we're gonna get to some of those individual Fox personalities in a little bit. Why is this being brought up? Well, Mark Meadows is now trying not to cooperate with that hearing after making some of this material, including the PowerPoint, laying out options for ending democracy, and now these text messages. But they make clear that a lot of people were trying to get through to Meadows. Now, some of these people are those who will, after they press send on those text messages, they will never again in public ever acknowledge that what happened on January 6th was serious or bad in any way. But Nina, I'm curious what you thought about the move by Liz Cheney to reveal some of these text messages.
Yeah, I'm glad she did. And you know, we know she's not a flaming progressive or anything like that. That's not what this is about. There comes a time when something is so egregious within your own party that you have to speak up and say something about it. So for that, I definitely applaud her. I know she's no fan of Mr. Trump and it's vice versa, but I'm so glad that she took her time and methodically read all of that out. And as for the Fox people, John, you are right. But the fact that they did, even behind the scenes, sound the alarm is very telling. This was a 21st century attempt to overthrow the government. And you got some people acting like it was just a walk in the park. It was not. It was dangerous. And it can happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, and it gets a little bit complicated by the fact that this was a multi-pronged attempt to overthrow the government. And each person gets to decide, based on what we've seen, which of the prongs they find most disconcerting. Was it the mob trying to kill the vice president and maybe steal the actual documents needed to certify the vote? Was it the many representatives and senators who tried to overturn a vote that they knew was not fraudulent? Was it the president trying to pressure the vice president to not go along with the Constitution? I mean, there's a lot going on there. None of it's good. But we have alluded to the fact that Fox personalities specifically were involved in this. So here is a little bit of what they had to say.
President needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingraham wrote. Please get him on TV, destroying everything you have accomplished, Brian Kilmeade texted. Quote, can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol, Sean Hannity urged. As the violence continued, one of the president's sons texted Mr. Meadows, quote, he's got to condemn this ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough. Donald Trump Jr. texted. Meadows responded, quote, I'm pushing it hard. I agree. Still, President Trump did not immediately act. Donald Trump Jr. texted again and again, urging action by the president. Quote, we need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It has gone too far and gotten out of hand, end quote.
So basically all except apparently Tucker Carlson, either those haven't been revealed or he wasn't messaging Mark Meadows. It's entirely possible he was specifically texting Trump, because we know he has his ear. But all of them were trying to get through to him. All of them were saying, this has gone too far. You've got to stop it. You individually have to act. You're ruining your legacy. But Nina, what I find interesting is none of those people, Laura Ingraham or Hannity or Kilmeade, have gone on to then say his legacy was ruined or that it did go too far. They all seem to think as it was happening, this is devastating. Privately, publicly though, they had very different things to say over the course of nearly a year.
Yeah, and that comes in how deep was your conviction in the first place? Certainly glad to know that they attempted to. Now that hasn't continued. And even to see or to hear some of the things that Donald Trump Jr. had to say or sent message to Meadows is very telling, that even a broke clock can be right twice a day. Yeah. And in this case, Donald Trump Jr. was absolutely right in the sense of urgency that he was raising to Meadows. He has to do an address. He has to stop this. But one of the things we do understand about President Trump is that he is, in fact, one of the most selfish people to ever walk the planet. I say one because I don't know all, but this was really about him. And it reminds me very much of the character in The Matrix, Mr. Smith. And those of you who watch Matrix knows that Mr. Smith tried to absorb everybody and everything for his own self-edification. And he did not care one iota who it hurt. And that, my friends, is President Donald J. Trump. It's all about him. Me, 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 me. And even as he saw this unfold, and all of the people who he respects and admires, or at least the people who he preys on him, John, no matter what, are now sounding the alarm. Mm-hmm. And that didn't move this president in enough time.
I couldn't agree more. And I couldn't agree more in the specific way that you did. I didn't know we'd be talking about Matrix today. I'm excited for Resurrections as well. I hope that you all are. The comparison breaks down a little bit in that Mr. Smith and all the agents had relatively well-tailored suits. So there are some differences between them. But I do agree in the selfishness and viewing humans and perhaps democracy as a bunch of parasites and unnecessary. But I also agree with you, by the way. This is not only seemingly, and we can find out more information, but seemingly one of the best things Don Jr. has done. I think this is the only good thing Don Jr.'s ever done. He was actually trying to stop it. Now, it does lead to one small side question that will lead to a poll. So right now at tyt.com/polls, I do want to get your opinion though. Why did he text Mark Meadows rather than his dad? Or call his dad. And we gave you two options. One is daddy won't give Junior his number. The other is Junior's too terrified to stand up to Papa. Both are good explanations. I don't know exactly what it is. One would think you could call your father with this information, but I don't know. Maybe someday my kid will be going through my chief of staff or something. So tyt.com/polls. We'll try to have those results for the close of this hour with Nina.
But John, maybe he did, and maybe it hasn't been revealed. I mean, maybe he was pulling out all the stops. We just don't know. I love the poll though, but just in case, I wanted to put that out there. Maybe he did call his dad, and he said, "Look, I'm calling him, and I'm gonna let this chief of staff, who's right in his face right now, know how I feel."
Yeah, maybe he thought that Mark Meadows could get through in a way that the family couldn't. Yeah, that's very reasonable, very logical. You're there.
Yeah.
As we've been saying though, despite the text messages that these Fox personalities sent to Mark Meadows, making clear that they thought what they were seeing on January 6th was terrible, was gonna be very damaging to the MAGA movement. In public and since, that is not how they were communicating. So Laura Ingraham had said his legacy is gonna be destroyed. That night on the 6th, she said on her show, "We knew this would happen when you have a huge group of people descending on Capitol Hill, when you have members of the Trump support organizations and Antifa threatening to show up at the same time. We'll learn more to the extent that that happened. I'm getting a sense that there's clearly a big split in the MAGA groups that have come to peacefully protest with whoever is behind this intrusion in the Capitol, which by any account is unacceptable." So she seems to imply that maybe it was the Trump people, but I mean, it could be Antifa, and we'll probably find out. Hannity on his radio show that afternoon agreed with a caller who vehemently insisted that it was Antifa that was behind the mayhem at the Capitol, adding that he, quote, heard these reports they might even wear MAGA gear, and he didn't know who the people are storming the building. On Fox News that night, he said it was possible that it was bad actors from the radical left who infiltrated the mob. So if it was Antifa and if it was the radical left, what could Trump have possibly done? First of all, what responsibility would he have? And second of all, why would making a statement have had any effect on them? So again, we have their public statement and what they were saying privately, and it sure seems that they knew what it was, but they had to immediately go and lie to their audience to protect the egos and the fragile worldview of Fox viewers. More importantly though, they have spent a year trying to minimize or distract from what they were so terrified at on the day. And that is, like, I know that they're not journalists, and I know that we shouldn't have any expectations for them. But when you see the lie laid out like so clearly with their own messages, it's insane that we know that it won't have any effect on them. They're not gonna lose their jobs, they're not gonna be chastised for this. How pathetic is the current state of our media like apparatus in America that you can't have those expectations?
Of course. And as you just laid out, they absolutely know it. Their first instincts were right, and they can try to make all the excuses, try to put in other players that really have nothing to do with the MAGA movement. They know good and well this was the MAGA movement, and that there is only one person that could truly speak that language, and that was President Trump himself, and he failed to do it. Because again, I don't think he cared whether they burnt the whole sucker down, which they tried, and tried to kill the vice president and threatening members of Congress with death. People did die. People got hurt. People's lives will never be the same, especially the same law enforcement that they claim to love and to appreciate, but had really nothing to say at the attacks that those people put on law enforcement. And they were wrong in every sense of the every stretch of the imagination. So John, those text messages that we now have revealed to us is what is right.
Yeah.
100%. This other stuff is nonsense.
But by the way, I want to give just a slight more credit to Don Jr. just for the novelty of it. I'll never have to do it again. So I went to try to see what he was tweeting the day of, because we have a little, we know what all these people said behind the scenes.
Sure.
We know what Hannity and Ingram were saying on their show. Don Jr. tweeted, "This is wrong and not who we are. Be peaceful and use your First Amendment rights, but don't start acting like the other side. We have a country to save and this doesn't help anyone." Which, look, he turns it, like literally the violence he's watching unfold, he turns it into attack on the left, but he at least seems to accept that it's their people that's doing it. That's so right. Again, like, and it's not to say that he hasn't dabbled in implying that it might have been infiltrators or whatever since then, but he was somewhat responsible there. So here's the thing, following this revelation, which you have to admit, having your text messages read into the congressional record is kind of a big deal. You might think that they would respond in some way. Nope, neither Hannity nor Ingram addressed the text messages on their shows, even though Hannity interviewed Mark Meadows on his show. They just didn't talk about it. The fact that they had communicated, the fact that Hannity had never revealed for almost a year that he was desperately trying to get Trump to intervene, they just didn't bring it up because you never have to on the right. You never have to acknowledge these inconvenient facts. Brian Kilmeade, we'll see, maybe today he will. He was tweeting about his book, trying to unseat the 1619 Project. He had time to tweet about that, not about the fact that he was trying to get through to Trump. Finally, this morning on Harris Faulkner's hour, they mentioned that Fox hosts had sent messages, but they didn't read the actual messages. And they didn't, like, I don't know, ask someone in the room next door, the individual person, why they had sent that or what they thought about it. So again, they don't have to be real about this. They don't have to acknowledge what they were doing. It's inconvenient, so they're just going to gloss over it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that happens a lot in politics. The thing about this moment, it is so consequential. That is the thing about this moment and the reason why we just can't sweep this under the rug or make it seem like, oh, it's just one of those things. Good people on both sides, to quote the president. No, this is absolutely not that moment. And again, John, one of the things that bothers me tremendously, and there's lots that bothers me. Maybe we should have a show about what bothers John and Nina, but immensely, is that this absolutely, something like this could happen again, and they know it. And the fact that, you know, as you're pointing out, that they won't come clean and lift up the things that they were feeling on the day of is very telling.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I would love to see the text messages, if there are any from anybody, and we don't know, encouraging Trump not to say anything. Like, if they were speaking out in this way, was there anyone? Was Steve Bannon messaging Mark Meadows? We have no idea, no reason necessarily to believe. Was Roger Stone trying to communicate with Trump? You know, the Stop the Steal people, who a report said had been advised to buy burner phones, because that's not suspicious. Were they messaging? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out at some point. I would love to have the Fox News personalities actually address why they sent the messages that they did and why they pretended not to be concerned about this afterward. But they're probably not going to address it. Interestingly, Newsmax kind of did a bit of journalism, or at least a little bit more reminiscent of journalism than Fox was willing to do. A Newsmax host, I can't be bothered to learn their names and you shouldn't either, had Mark Meadows on and actually asked him about the text messages. Let's see how that went.
Conservative media runs away from this story. We're not afraid of it here. I think it's a grossly over-exaggerated story, but I also think it was a very bad day for this country. I don't think it's anywhere near what the Democrats think it was. They've got reports of text messages, they say, that you gave them that show Fox host saying, hey, you know, you got to get this under control. Trump needs to say something. Don Jr. saying something. What's your response to all this tonight?
Yeah, obviously, it's not a surprising decision by the committee. You know, we really need to look at what it's all about. They have nothing to run on. They want to talk about Build Back Busted. And yet what they've done is had a contempt vote. We've tried very hard in a very transparent and accommodating way to share non-privileged information.
Build Back Busted isn't as clever as I think he thought it was. So he was asked by that journalist, you know, what about the text messages that were revealed? And even that guy had to be like, I mean, not that I care about it. It wasn't really a big deal or whatever. And what I love though about that, Nina, was him saying like other conservative media is fleeing from it. Newsmax won't, which presumably has nothing to do with the fact that he thinks this makes Fox look bad. And Newsmax sees their only avenue to getting more viewership is taking it from Fox. So, okay, it's a little bit convenient that in this case, you'll pretend to be doing journalism. That said, Mark Meadows doesn't engage with the content of the text messages literally for even a second, Nina. He says, absolutely. Oh, I'm not surprised they would attack us. Yeah, but what about what they said? What about the fact that Mark Meadows replied that he is pushing back against Trump strongly, trying to get him to do something?
Now, there's a saying, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Mm-hmm. And that's really what Mark Meadows did right there. Won't let the truth get in the way of a good story that they're propagating. And continuing even to this moment, knowing the damage. I mean, threatening to lynch the vice president of the United yep. States of America. You don't think that's serious? You think that the people on the Democratic side are exaggerating that, using that because they don't have anything to run? No. No, sir. You are wrong. You are deflecting. It was a cluster on January the 6th, and that's being kind.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I appreciate the self-censorship there. let's give a little bit, one more chance. Is Mark Meadows going to engage with the content of what was revealed? Let's take a look.
Is that not only did that just get disregarded, but then they tried to weaponize text message, selectively leak them to put out a narrative that quite frankly that the president didn't act. And I can tell you, this is the president did act. This is all about, you know, it's not about holding me in contempt. It's yeah. about coming after President Donald Trump. And sadly, that's what tonight's vote was all about.
Well, I mean, Trump didn't do anything. So I guess in some ways, yes, it is kind of about him. He's doing the MAGA thing of like, everybody, like, they're coming for Trump. Don't pay attention to the content. And again, he wouldn't. He wouldn't acknowledge. Why are so many prominent Republican figures desperately trying to get you to act? And why were you responding to them that you too were trying to get him to do more than he was doing? Was that true? Or were you lying? In either case, I find that interesting. What were your thoughts about the timeline of January 6th? You can't just say, well, they're attacking. Okay, sure, they're attacking. Now let's talk about the action. You apparently didn't do anything wrong. You would have us believe. So tell us what you actually did. But no, it's like, this is why, again, we've been, you know, somewhat critical of since even before there was this January 6th commission, but it is the only way we're going to learn anything about this. He's not going to freely talk about it. So if we're going to learn anything at all, it's going to have to be from these leaks of, you know, text messages and phone records and things like that.
If we didn't know before, John, it becomes crystal clear in that particular interview why Meadows was the chief of staff. Mm-hmm. He is going to shield for Donald J. no matter what the cost, even a moment of the magnitude of what happened on January 6th. He knows the truth. The president did not act. The president poured the gasoline on the damn on the fire. That's what he yeah. did. He did that. And they got to own this. And they're still starting, you know, the fire all across this country with the things that they're doing and propagating and putting out there. And just adding to the discord that is happening right now. They did that. President Trump yeah. did that. And he could have been very presidential. He could have done something that was against his nature. Ha ha, did not do it. But he could have stood up to those people and said, you're wrong and I need you to stand down.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, everyone, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, we're gonna be talking about student loan debt. Student loan repayment is about to start up in less than a month. What does the Biden administration think about it? We'll give you that after this. okay, we'll eventually turn to lighter news, happier news, or whatever, I think, maybe. But for now, we have this.
Administration considering extending that student loan payment pause. I know there's, if not, besides legislation that probably won't pass, what are some of the options that can help these people?
You're talking about the student loan payment pass that expires in February, just for clarity. So in the coming weeks, we will release more details about our plans and we'll engage directly with federal student loan borrowers to ensure they have the resources they need and are in the appropriate repayment plan. We're still assessing the impact of the Omicron variant, but a smooth transition back into repayment is a high priority for the administration.
A smooth transition back into repayment is a high priority for the administration. It is very important to us that you all start paying soon. Now, she did also want it to be smooth, so I guess there's that to play devil's advocate. And you kind of have to because this is the work of the devil. But it's very important to them, Nina, that people begin paying soon. And it's looking like that will happen with the turn of the new year, within about a month. People will be once again paying after a brief period of not having to during the pandemic.
Oh, John. I mean, you can see I'm fidgeting in my seat. I can barely contain myself. What kind of nonsense was she spouting out? It makes absolutely, there's no need to analyze the crime. It's here. Mm-hmm. We are not over the pandemic by any stretch of the imagination. It doesn't matter if we were still on the Delta variant. Get that through their thick head.
Yeah.
Cancel student debt. Almost $2 trillion worth it. We just got out of the longest war in America's history, right? They pouring money, extra money into the defense budget that hasn't even been asked for. But yet we got to beg these people for the president to do something that he has the ultimate authority to do, which is to cancel the damn student debt. Do that right away and stop making all these excuses. Jesus, John, I'm telling you something. This right here, because I know he said 10,000 and then, you know, maybe 50 and progressives like us want it all. Whatever it is, he's not even canceling the 10,000, which I think is way too low. Just go ahead and cancel the student debt. And you got people like Congresswoman Presley, you know, Senator Warren, all kinds of Congress people, House of Representative members, and also senators. Even Senator Chuck Schumer is weighing in on this.
Yeah.
Memo to the White House. Stop making excuses and please stop sending Jen out there like that to the wolves. Because what she just said is nonsense. Just going to cancel student debt. Stop
100%.
Playing.
Yeah, you're totally right. You don't need to study, well, we'll see if Omicron is bad. So first of all, you're 100% right, it is here. But also to your larger point, who the hell cares if COVID was gone by, like, we'll say noon? You should still cancel it, and you said that you would. You already that you would do that. So I don't understand why you're having to look into it. Jen Psaki was asked what can be done to help these people, and I love that the person who asked the question was like, other than legislation, which is not going to pass, so don't talk about the legislation because it's not going to happen. What can be done? And she doesn't have anything. She said, no, we're smooth transition back to repayment. She did say she wants to make sure that they have the resources. She means like information about the schedule or whatever. The resources is the money necessary. And I hope that we don't have to convince too many people in our audience of why this is a good thing, but I would like to make it a bit of an analogy. So one of the reasons why people are not just pushing for federal legalization of marijuana, but for people to have prior convictions stripped from the record is when something was illegal but never should have been, you cannot simply consign people to their fate for the rest of their life because they lived under a system that was fundamentally unjust. That is the case with student loan debt as well. We should not only make college affordable in the future, but people should have never been buried under the debt that they were. They never should have had to make this impossible choice between pursuing either, let's say, their dreams or just what seemed like a road to actually being able to get a job and make money, but being buried under debt as a result of that. They should have that cleared away. And one person who seemed to understand that not that long ago was Joe Biden, who made promises. We don't have to like just try to persuade him. He tried to persuade us to support him because of his position on student loan debt cancellation. And suddenly he doesn't remember what he said back when he said it over and over and over again.
Yeah, this is really sad. And there's a racial, there's definitely a class component, but there's a caste component to canceling student debt as well, because the African American community holds the largest amount of student debt, highest interest rates, and then Black women in particular. So not only will you have a class component to this, because you know we're crushing the fact that ultra wealthy people don't have student loans. So just go and put that excuse to the side. You will be helping people who are in the middle class or who were trying to get in the middle class. You know, I'm a first generation college graduate. I mean, John, it was programmed in us. Get an education, get a higher education. And especially in the African American community that has the cultural dynamic of constantly always having to prove our worth. One of the things that was very important to the Black community was to get an education, because it was denied us in this country for such a long time. And even when it wasn't denied, it was put out half measure. So let me just go back to this main point. The man can cancel student debt with a stroke of a pen. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't he do that? Just do it. Caste and class component. It is a win-win for everybody, no matter how they identify, to have the president of the United States of America cancel student debt post haste. And Jen Psaki needs to quit it. Cut it out.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know the media does too, because I saw a headline about how like either her or someone else's ringtone had gone off, and she'd made some joke about how there's music in the, I don't care about that at all. I don't care about your Psaki bombs. You are representing a man who has the wrong position. And like maybe she doesn't have the position to convince him. I don't doubt that, but she could not be actively insulting about it in the way that she was right
there.
That's
exactly right. No, you're right, John. I'm glad you put that point out there. She works at the pleasure of, I get that, because I worked for at the pleasure of, you know, a mayor before. So I understand that you serve at the pleasure of, you know, I worked side by side with Senator Bernie Sanders on his campaign. So I get it, but you're absolutely right. She's just very cavalier about other people suffering. And I guess you can be if you're okay, when you have no empathy for what people are going through in this country. And we're just going to walk them through another set of bureaucracy that's only going to further frustrate them.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense. I guess he has the power to do it and they know it. Remember when they delayed even the memo coming from the Secretary of Education? Delay, deny. That didn't work. Everybody knows that the President of the United States of America has the power to cancel student debt, and the relief that would give to hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people in this country is unparalleled. That disposable income, what they could do with that income, they need it. We need it. Why are people out here striking? I mean, there's an intersection to all of the things that are going on right now, from workers standing up demanding better wages to canceling student debt to give people relief. Jesus, 100%. Mary and Joseph.
You're 100% right. Okay, let's move on to other news. Eventually, we will get to something bright. We're gonna make fun of Elon Musk, so just stay tuned for that, okay? We're gonna ruthlessly mock Elon Musk. I can't think of almost anyone else in the country who deserves it more, so stay tuned for that. But first, this. We're fresh off a swarm of tornadoes that cost many people their lives across multiple states, including some who had been forced to stay at work when they shouldn't have. Now, making it even worse, in the months leading up to that event, there had been attempts to try to protect workers from reprisals against them if they refuse to work under conditions they consider to be unsafe. So as in most other states, corporate interests have preserved what is called at-will employment laws in both Kentucky, the site of the most individual deaths during this incident, and Illinois, which also saw deaths, that allow employers to fire workers for no cause. Earlier this year, though, in Illinois, lawmakers introduced legislation to protect workers from such firings unless an employer had just cause for termination. And this piece of legislation, the Illinois Employee Security Act, explicitly states that a just cause for firing does not include, quote, an employee's refusal to work under conditions that the employee reasonably believes would expose him or her, other employees, or the public to unreasonable health or safety risk. And so David Sirota over at the Daily Poster with co-authors as well has done a great job on this. So we know that some people didn't feel safe going into work in these conditions and eventually lost their lives. is it unreasonable to say that they worried about being fired if they didn't go into work? And not just here, although this is what's in the news, but we know workers died during Sandy. Workers died in other instances where they never should have felt like they had to make a choice between protecting their lives and protecting their livelihood. But because of the fact that this at-will employment law is so common across so many states, Nina, that is very much a decision that they seem to have had to have made.
And another reason why the Congress should have passed already the PRO Act, which will deal with right to work state, excuse me, there would not be right to work state when the PRO Act passes to be able to strengthen employees' ability to really look out for themselves. I'm glad to see what is happening in Illinois. But yes, people feel the need to go to work. They don't want to lose their job, and they're willing to risk their lives so that they can protect their livelihood. To your point, those two things go together, and it should not happen. It is a callous indifference to working class people.
Yeah, flat out. 100%. I want to show an example of how this works in practice. This text message has been going around. It's just devastating. More Perfect Unions have been spreading on Twitter. The horrifying details are emerging about the tornado disaster at Amazon's warehouse in Illinois, where 6 people died. Larry Verdon had texted his girlfriend. Here's the actual text communication. Him saying, "I'm fueling up now. Well, I will be home after the storm." The response is, "What you mean?" He says, "Amazon won't let us leave." The response is, "All it's doing here is lightning. So what are you doing? I hope everything is okay. I love you." And he died, leaving behind not only his girlfriend, but 4 kids as well. And like, he never should have had to make that decision. No one should have to. Like, we shouldn't have you worried about, you know, slipping and falling at work, getting exposed to COVID as so many were forced to during the pandemic, let alone to have to stand in the path of a catastrophic tornado that can tear apart an entire factory. But these are the decisions that were seemingly made. And there's some other great reporting, by the way. Everyone should go follow Ken Klippenstein on Twitter. He has Amazon workers and workers at other factories sending in information about the lack of preparedness training that had happened in some of these areas that, I shouldn't have to remind you, are disaster prone. It's not the first tornado that has hit some of these states. And companies just haven't taken it seriously, because taking it seriously is apparently more of a financial risk to them than spending a couple $1 million in the wake of a disaster to buy a little bit of positive press. Any final thoughts, Nina?
Yeah, just amen to what you said, John. They should all be hauled in. They should be ashamed of themselves, but they're not ashamed of themselves, because if they were, this would not be the situation that we're in. No delivery, none of this stuff is more important than saving the lives of the people that make all of this stuff happen. And we have to understand truly that when this is happening to workers who we may not know, you know, it really is happening to us, that we are indelibly linked in that way, and we can never ever forget it.
Yeah, 100%. I want to read just a bit of an excerpt from a write-up that Ken had at The Intercept, saying many workers, all of whom requested anonymity to protect their jobs, said they'd never had a tornado or even a fire drill over the course of their careers at Amazon, dating back up to 6 years. Several expressed that they would be unsure of what to do in an emergency. In one case, an Amazon contractor, fearing Hurricane Ida, asked to go home early, but was told that leaving would adversely affect their performance quota. So look, federal government needs to get involved, obviously, to help out people who've lost their homes and their jobs and all of that right now. But they also need to use this as an opportunity to look into the fact that these companies have been able to get away with what amounts to effectively murder for a number of years.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take another break. When we come back, we will lighten things up a little bit, perhaps, we'll see. But don't go anywhere, we've got that for you in just a few. Okay, everybody, oh God, it's time. Time to talk about this, let's jump into it.
This morning, the world's richest man, Elon Musk, was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year.
So Elon Musk, Time's Person of the Year. Nina, what do you think about the choice? I don't know who else they could have possibly chosen. Seems like the obvious one.
Time is just out of time with me. I mean, seriously. I don't know what you want me to do with that, John. It is ridiculous. Okay, putting all kinds of extra syllables on the word. Ridiculous that they would even do that. But it just, again, when we talk about the class construct, of media in this country, that is very fitting. Mm-hmm. That they would be so blind or not able to strike, I said blind, but not able to understand how wrong it is to make that man.
Yep.
Time of all the people. Of the year. Jesus Christ. I'm calling on Jesus a lot.
You're going to have to invoke him. If it hadn't already been used by another very worthy effort, I would want to coin Time's Up. Like, no, not Elon Musk. Honestly, like you could just put the names of everyone on Earth and just throw a dart and hit someone more deserving. But to be fair, let's give them their chance. Here is what Time says in their write-up: for creating solutions to an existential crisis, for embodying the possibilities and the perils of the age of tech titans, for driving society's most daring and disruptive transformations, Elon Musk is Time's 2021 Person of the Year. Well, hold up, Time, because you left off a few things. Don't you think you should recognize the fact that he's also the person who tweeted at a United States senator, "Why does your pee-pee look like you just came?" Seems like that's noteworthy. I mean, maybe it's easy to forget. It was almost a month ago that he sent that to United States senator. No, but seriously, like, I understand that Tesla's a big company and he's wealthy. And we have been trained from birth to think, well, if somebody has money, they're clearly better than us. I'm a lowly peasant. I deserve to be stepped on by these titans of industry. But can we acknowledge a few other things about him? Like, for instance, lawsuits of at Tesla alleging both a culture of racism as well as misogyny, reports of burnout culture at SpaceX and growing scrutiny of autopilot. A lot of concerns about that. So, and by the way, when we talk about these things, these aren't just the scandals that they are. If he is anything, he is something because of the work of engineers at Tesla and SpaceX. They're the ones who are doing daring and disruptive transformations and possibilities and perils. He's not tightening bolts on a Tesla. He's not designing the Model 3. Tons of engineers, largely using huge influxes of money from the federal and state governments. Those are the ones who are making rockets and stuff. Yes, he is technically their leader. And he appears to spend a lot of his time tweeting, trying to go on SNL and designing flamethrowers and stuff. So I think a little bit of balance in how we present these people can be good. But Nina, I am curious from your point of view, is there anyone else who you feel like might have been deserving in 2021 of this recognition?
Oh Lord, you got me wanting to start out sharing names. Can I just make another point about that tweet mm-hmm. that you showed? And then the other one when he said, you're still alive. You know, I forgot you were still alive. He had directed that.
To Bernie Sanders?
And yeah, I mean, the man is, you know, he may be brilliant in some ways, but he's absolutely, he has no humanity, can't show it. He is a megalomaniac too, and definitely not deserving. It's not just because he's ultra wealthy. It is because of the way he comports himself and how he does really look down on other people. He thinks he's better and he thinks he's above it. In terms of who would be, you know, there are two, God, I hate to do this, John. I think the labor unions that are out there striking mm-hmm. on a regular basis, standing up, demanding more money, especially, and I won't say especially, and those in particular who the older folks or more people who want more seniority in a place are rejecting contracts that will not be equal for people coming after them. And that's either age or just in seniority. Just those folks deserve to be, you know, that movement deserves to be part of Time's Persons of the Year. And then if I had to name a person, I got several, but I'm going to throw out Congresswoman Cori Bush. For her to be able to sleep out like that and turn everything upside down. I know that the Supreme Court went in another direction. Absolutely shame on them. But her courage under fire to say, I'm not going anywhere. And I'm also going to call out members who just went on a flipping vacation and let them know that people are about to be evicted from their homes was very courageous and definitely worthy of being not just Time's Person of the Year, but for all of us.
I think you're 100% right. I mean, what? Like we're coming off of this pandemic, the heroes. Yeah. Remember we called them heroes that got us through this. Give it to the heroes then. Give it to the people striking and making these amazing gains. trying to fight back against the anti-labor positions of companies like Amazon, Starbucks, and stuff like that. Give it to the healthcare workers who, by the way, are still dying needlessly because they're being exposed to COVID and the variants from people who refuse to take this seriously, but they still month after month work in this. There are so many people, even if you're just trying to like be controversial and like tapped into like pop, give it to Olivia Rodrigo or something if you just wanna be cool. You don't have to give it to Elon Musk, a guy who should, if he represents anything, represents unearned wealth. It was given to him and then his companies were kept afloat for literally years while they were unprofitable by the government, who doesn't give a damn about his workers, doesn't give a damn about humans generally, could do an amazing amount of good with his wealth and is choosing every day not to. And on top of it is a disgusting try hard pig. How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
Anyway, we have to talk about something arguably even worse, so let's jump into this. Sorry, Nina. You know what? It's just gonna be fun stuff next week.
Okay, Actually, we do that.
Yeah. Okay, it's just gonna be fun. Anyway, so you remember not long ago when, as we were pulling out of Afghanistan, there was a horrific drone strike that killed a number of civilians. And we only found out about it after like a solid week of the Pentagon refusing to acknowledge that it even happened. Well, they've been looking into it since then, and they announced just yesterday that none of the military personnel involved in that drone strike that killed 10 civilians, 7 of them children, would be punished in literally any way. The Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, who had left the final word on what would be done, if anything, to 2 different subordinates, approved the recommendation not to punish anyone. Pentagon spokesperson Kirby says, "What we saw here was a breakdown in process and execution and procedural events. Not the result of negligence, not the result of misconduct, not the result of poor leadership. So I do not anticipate there being issues of personal accountability to be had with respect to the August 29th airstrike," where, to remind you, they blew up a car in front of a house and just killed a bunch of civilians, seemingly with no reason to believe they'd ever been involved with anything to the level of shoplifting, let alone terrorist activity. But there's no issues, Nina, of personal accountability or any kind of failure in leadership.
No, of course not. You know, this kind of stuff breeds hatred for the United States of America. It just does. Where's the justice? And Councilwoman Fannie M. Lewis from the great city of Cleveland used to say, "It doesn't matter if you meant to kill me on accident, on purpose, or by accident. Dead is dead." And that is literal in this situation. And so not to hold somebody accountable to me is a humanitarian injustice, and it doesn't make this country look good at all, because again, other nations treating them like the other and their lives don't matter. It was children, even if it was just adults, but there were children killed as well, and they did not deserve to die. And there should be some consequences for this failure that caused the loss of life of innocent people.
Yeah, and there should be consequences, if not just because a horrific act was perpetrated, and horrific acts there should be someone who's responsible for them. If not for that, do you not want them to be rarer in the future? Like, let's say it wasn't leadership. Okay, so we're not gonna take out any of the leaders or whatever. But like, so nothing was done wrong. There's nobody who should have thought a little bit more. Nobody should have questioned their findings. Well, if that's the case, then the message you seem to be sending to me and to the country is we can't learn anything from this because nothing was done wrong. And so, you know, it's probably just gonna happen some more. And why not? It happened for years and years and years. So it would seem as if maybe just to send a message that you should double and triple check this sort of thing, somebody should be reprimanded even. We don't even find out who did it, who okayed it, who pressed the button. We have no idea. Nobody was responsible. It's an amazing system where you can have the power over life and death for dozens, hundreds, thousands of people, but you don't have any responsibility for what you do with it, whether it goes perfectly or whether it goes absolutely horrendously. There's just no responsibility. It's amazing, Nina.
Yeah, and on top of that, using the taxpayer's dime, many dimes. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Anyway, by the way, there's been some great reporting in the New York Times about what's called, Talon Anvil, this group that did thousands and thousands of these attacks. So look into that, it's absolutely devastating. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have in the first hour. Nina, as always, thank you so much for joining us. It is a pleasure to be able to talk the news with you.
Oh, absolutely. See you next week. Good news, more good news.
Hopefully. And everyone check out Power Hour too. Okay, with that, everyone watching on our linear platforms, thank you so much for joining us. If you are on the members app or on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have a lot more news to get to, including some fun stuff, I swear. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.